Oh my gosh. Welcome to the finale episode of Suspicion, the watch along Suspicion edition. You know, you would have thought by the time we got to the end of episode 8 that I would be really good at that, but I was distracted because so here's the deal. I'm currently visiting family up to north in England. The internet at my parents' house is just not reliable. And I don't trust somebody not to just walk in with a creaky door. So, an actual creaky door, that's not a euphemism for anything. Anyway, so I've hired this conference room. And actually, I feel very... I've never really been in a conference room before. But look, there's things on the window, sort of like the window wall things that does this. They open and close these shutters. And it feels quite Suits, you know, when they would be come into my office. Or Mad Men. No, that's probably before Mad Men days. But you know what I mean, when somebody takes a character into their office to have a private meeting and they close the blindy bits. Anyway, so that feels great. And then look at the view. There's Tesco, which is a British institution. That's our grocery store, supermarket. I came here, you know, to up the quality, have good sound and everything, and it's actually really echoey. So hopefully we can fix that slightly, but you know, it's part of keeping it real, isn't it? It's lovely I'm in the north of England because today's guest is also from the north of England, Mr. Rob Williams, who is the showrunner of Suspicion. You know, head writer, he adapted it from the series False Flag, so he's the creator of Suspicion, and it's just so wonderful. I mean, he's so lovely, and I would like to say we're friends, but I am just a massive fan also, so hopefully I don't freak out too much on the Zoom, but he's just done some of my favourite things ever. So he did Man in the High Castle on Amazon, which if you haven't seen it is incredible, watch it, and if you have watched it, watch it again, because it's just so good. He's done Killing Eve, he did The Victim, he has a new show called Screw, depending on when you're watching this, it's new or not. And he's just absolutely brilliant. I'm so excited to speak to him today. So here we are from a hotel in the north of England, Chesterfield to be exact, which is not exactly where I'm from, but you know, let me show you the view. Beautiful, which is lovely too, because you know, we're talking about the finale and we might talk maybe more this week about Tara, who I played, more than other weeks, which I'm sure you're all caught up on the finale, but if you're not, you know, there will most likely be spoilers. And she is from the north of England as well. So, you know, it's just still the northerners coming together and uniting. So anyway, hopefully this goes, well, it's gonna go brilliantly, but we'll see if it goes smoothly. I've got it set up, if you're able to watch along, amazing. I hope that you've enjoyed these. They've been a joy for me to do. And hopefully there's some inspirational nuggets in there that if you want to work in the industry, or if you just, not just, but if you want to work in the industry, or if you want to, you know, just do anything, if you want to do anything or nothing, hopefully this feels inspiring. And if not inspiring, entertaining. And if not entertaining, then why the heck are you listening / watching all the way to episode 8? Thank you for being here. I feel so lucky to have gotten all these incredible guests on, and Rob Williams is no exception. So without further ado, welcome to the Watch Along, episode 8. I just realised I haven't actually said what the episode is called. So it's called Unmasked. Oh, what a great name for a finale. It was directed by Chris Long. It was written by Megan Gallagher. The tagline is, as Leo's countdown begins, Cresswell's past leads Vanessa and Scott to uncover the truth. Which is great, because you know, on some finales to shows, you don't actually find out the answer and it's really annoying. That's not the case here. We find out the answer. We find out the why, the who, the how of it all. So let's go. I'll see you on the Zoom. The Zoom, the Zoom, the Zoom. That's just in case it's super echoey. You know, we just work with what we've got, don't we? Everybody, welcome along to the Watch Along Suspicion Edition, episode 8, the finale, with the showrunner, the main man, the creator of Suspicion, Rob Williams. Hello.
Hey, hello.
Hey.
Great to be here. Great to see you.
Oh my gosh, so lovely to see you. I know, we were just saying that it's actually nice, Even though it's Zoom, it's nice to have some sort of
Zoom's the new normal of seeing people, isn't it? I mean, it's like it's such a bonus to see somebody in real life now, but still,
it's a bit off-putting, isn't it? So, right, we're going to press play. We're going to do a countdown. So, everybody at home, if you're able to press play with us, we're going to press it. Oh, we're both at 1:26. Okay, and we're pressing play in 3, 2, 1, play. Oh, gives me a thrill every time. Yes. Here we go, Apple original. Go on.
I was just going to say, isn't the music good?
It's like, the music is so good, and I know. You know, we could possibly play it at some point, but I don't know if that's
No.
I would love it. It's great music. What's the process of the music? Like, do you...
What, the fit music?
Yeah.
Well, it's commissioned. Yeah, it was commissioned, from the same composer as the Israeli false flag, but a completely new everything. He treated it like a completely new show. He loves the show, Gilad,
and
he's a genius. He's the biggest composer in Israel, I believe, and he's just a genius. The guy.
Wow! But
he put it together, I think, for episode one when we were working on it, and it wasn't for the theme tune, but we already put together some samples, and I remember talking to Chris Long about it, and just going, I love that, and he loved it as well, and Apple loved it, so yeah.
How great! So talking about False Flag, that is what. You know, Suspicion is based on. I had quite a lot of questions from people saying, you know, sort of how that came about, what that process was. Can you talk a little bit about that, sort of how you do that? Because it's perhaps a bit different than, you know, it being your...
I mean, it is really different, actually. First time I've done it.
Is it the first time you've done it?
Yeah. But well, yeah, not the first thing I've written, but the first time I've taken something that exists. And and it's daunting in a way because it's so good, you know. I mean, it's False Flag's brilliant and a very different beast to this. And I think the journey from that to this is, I mean, we're going to need more than the 43 minutes or whatever it is.
Sure, got it.
We just had to find the DNA of our show, really, rather than... keep the essence of the original, which was the twisty turny, always pulling the rug, and then find something that really had resonance with an audience, you know, between the UK and the US, really.
Yeah. And I mean, this is talking about the UK and the US. This is, you know, we're in New York now, which half the episode, actually what we're watching now with Leo Newman on the screen, and we're kind of in whatever space he is in, we shot this in England, didn't we? But all the exteriors of this episode were shot in New York for New York. As a writer and somebody that's been doing this for a long time, to write scenes in Times Square, New York, and then to actually film there, was that just an out-of-body experience? Like, there's so few shows that get to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. I mean, it's an amazing toy box to play in generally, isn't it?
Yeah. The
whole show is just ridiculous, really. and the writer's room, because we had a peripatetic writer's room, you know, London, the Cotswolds, Norway, back to London, and then New York.
So you travelled as a gang?
We did. We were like strollers, they call it. You know, half pen wheel travel. We did. We went everywhere for all kinds of different reasons. But actually, some of the writers had never been to New York. And what became clear was that, you know, given that the back half of the show was really there. You know, we were there all the time. I think really, apart from the NCA stuff, we were pretty much there all the time. And and so we had to go. You know, Apple were wonderful and said, yes, okay, you should go, and we went, and the point of the story is that we got to walk around Times Square with production people going, okay, well, here's what's possible and what's not possible, and also look at shows that have done it before. I mean that's the daunting thing. There's been some amazing sequences in Times Square, you just think, oh god.
It's
fantastic.
Seeing us walk through, because we were filming this, we're now with back with Ooms again. But we just saw... Yes, please.
Scene. Sorry, Elizabeth, did you know this? Yeah. This was her first scene.
No, it wasn't.
It was, yeah. It was her first scene. Yeah.
Oh, well, wow.
There's a little bit, there's a tiny bit with you on, with a bit on, and a bit on stage, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. But yes, yes, yes.
That was her first real kind of like, yeah, we asked her to just to kind of like step in and just go straight to very high drama. And yeah, so this was in London, wasn't it?
I love this scene. I feel like Chris spoke about this scene as well. And it's such a wonderful moment that we really get to see her facade cracked as Catherine Newman, and she, you know, she's so composed as, well, I'd say as a person, but maybe that's just because as a character, Catherine Newman is so composed, then I just, you know, Uma's actually just a great actress. Yeah. But it's such a wonderful moment of being like, she's broken, she's kind of, you know, she's we really broken. Get that sense that her son, she's sort of allowing herself to believe her son could possibly not make it through this.
And that no matter what she does at this point, she's not going to get him back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I was just going to ask, like, in terms of character arc and stuff, did you see this as being kind of a real, not breaking point, but turning point for her?
Yeah. I think this was this episode is like everything stripped away. There's nothing to hide behind anymore for her. And it's sort of her realizing that as well, I think. That all the crutches and all the props that she's been so successful for in the past just aren't going to work anymore. And as I think she says in one of the earlier episodes, maybe seven, you know, the world's changed, and that's not just, you know, there's the words that say that, and then this is the episode where I think she really understands that.
Yeah, and do you think, because, you know, assuming everybody listening to this or watching this, oh, here we go. Oh, God, this gives me such a funny feeling.
Into the lift.
Into the lift. Oh, I love that lift.
So this was all just down the road from here, wasn't it, at Ealing Studios?
Yeah, all set.
I'm sat in Ealing now, and this was all just down the road.
Yeah, amazing.
All built. Fantastic.
Yeah, and we could actually walk it, you know, walk those corridors. They were all connected, which was just madness to be an actor and not have to really do much acting. And it was all just, I get obsessed going through sets and looking at the ceilings, because there's hardly any time that you see the ceiling on screen. But there in real life, you look up and they've just, I don't know, must have spent hours on these ceilings. And it's just
the hotel corridor, you know, the hotel corridor, I'm still obsessed with it. It's just one of the most amazing
obsessed
sets I've ever seen.
Yeah, I stole so many things from this set. Oh, yes, here it is. So beautiful. And it's modelled on, is it the Intercontinental in New York?
Yeah.
That's modelled on.
Yeah.
And it's so fun because it looks exactly like this. And so this moment when she sees Copeland, when Catherine Newman sees Copeland, this to me, I mean, obviously it breaks my heart because he's, you know, dead. Mm. But it really feels like this, it was the two of them against the world. And then, you know, there's no going back from it now. And also now people have actually killed people, like Natalie's actually killed someone and other people have witnessed it. It's not just we're trying to clear our names. There's actually been a crime committed now, which feels like such a, you know, obviously a huge turning point. Were you there on that day when they were shooting that scene, when Uma was shooting that scene?
Yeah, I was, absolutely. Yeah.
Was that just so intense?
Yeah, it was. And we actually had to finish that scene in New York, but we started it in London, and
my gosh,
it was the one that we had to pick up. But some of it we had to pick up, but it's a really important scene, and so is this one, but because it's really like, look at what we've become, how did this happen, you know, like you get a bit of their origin story if you want, and it was just the two of them at the beginning. Look, how did this happen? As you say, you're sitting there with a gunshot wound now, and it's
And it's such a lovely juxtaposition to seeing Eric Cresswell, you know, kind of a bit disheveled and confused, and his brilliant mind has kind of come to this paranoid recluse feeling, like living on a barge and everything. And then you see this opulence of Catherine Newman and, you know, corporate PR, and actually they're all sort of destroyed. You know, she's
and the lives of the, as you say, the lives that have been, that have been, that are touched by, you know, business as it would be to her, just kind of like it's well, that's the idea, isn't it? It's you know, you're just showing the ripple effect of decisions that were made for, you know, for corporate reasons in lots of ways.
Yeah, and the cutthroat nature of it. Was that something that, because I have to confess, I haven't actually watched False Flag. And the reason I never did was because I didn't want to, you know, like muddy the waters for Tara. But then I am allowed to watch it now because I, you know, we've finished the season. but so I don't know exactly what issues were kind of raised in that. But was that something that, was that from you, the sort of, can we ask, pose some questions about, because the show poses wonderful questions and about like corporate.
It was the most difficult bit, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was what took the time. I mean, the actual, you know, I think for a room full of writers, good writers, you know, you can plot anything, really. Even though this was extraordinarily complicated. I love this shot. So good. But for me, finding what the point was, finding what it was actually all about, was the most important bit and also the most difficult bit. And actually, it did, I mean, to be really honest, you know, it took a while. It took a real, we went through lots of iterations of it. But actually, you know, the idea of strategic communications, you know, just thinking about what was going on in the world at the time, you know, Trump was still in power, and what that meant for not geopolitically, but for us, for people, you know, when the truth is devalued, was really that. I remember that day so well when we came up with that. And I remember Apple coming in, I had to pitch it to them, and you just know, you just think, that's it.
Because I think that speaks a lot to you as a writer and as a storyteller, and obviously you're leading this room of very talented, passionate writers and storytellers, is that it needed to be more than the surface of these things happening to these people, to have this greater message and this grit. And I feel like that's something that I aspire to be able to do, and really just connected with you over, of going, yes, of course we want to hear the stories about these people, but also like, what else can you say on a bigger scale? And I was, oh my gosh, we're about to have the big reveal.
I know, we've just seen his face. And
oh,
and
my God. I was shocked when we did press for it, how many questions we got about those massive issues. Because as an actor, you kind of, you know, you really zone in on your character. But we were getting asked about the truth and what is truth and who do we trust and how much can you trust social media. We were like, oh, can you ask Rob, because we're the actors.
No, you did. I mean, we talked about it, and that was what was great about you as a group. I mean, you know, gosh, such a committed and sort of engaged group of people, and in a way that, you know, when you've got that, I think as the writers in the writers' room, you're just like, God, we have to have a reason, because we're going to get asked. You know, the actors are going to want to know what it's about, and what it's and why, you know, what, not the classic what's my motivation, but just like
what are you saying? End,
what does it add up to?
Totally. We got some questions about oh my gosh, let me find the name of it. Oh, Nat Ruiz asked, was it always going to be Tara, or did it come about when she was cast? We've just seen Tara go up to Leo and hug him, and then we understand what's happening, and now the, you know, the suspects are all sort of having it out, which this was just...
Oh, man, do you remember we had the luxury rehearsal for this, didn't we? We rehearsed this really, really hard, I think, and I'm really glad we did, actually, because I think it's just come out so well. This is one of those scenes and one of those moments where you want to sit in everybody's living room and see them react and see, like, you know, it's just like, you know, you didn't know, did you? You didn't know.
I know. I didn't tell one person.
No, good. Nor did I. Yeah. My little boy saw me watching Rushes once, and he clearly worked, he's 10, but he worked it out. And I've sworn him to secrecy, and he hasn't told us at all either. Was it always Tara? No, is the answer to that. No, it wasn't.
Really?
No, it wasn't. But actually, that week that I'm talking about, that really feels to me like the pivotal week, although, you know, everyone always says, like, writer's rooms, why do you need so long and all the rest of it? The trouble is you can't do without all this, like, all the stuff where you're just wading through treacle. Yeah. You have to do to get to that week where you just go, oh, of course, of course. And that was where it really became clear that it was Tara and why it was Tara. But I think probably all the guys had had a moment in the hot seat of going, oh yeah. And which is good in a way, because you had to believe that it could have been any of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose Tara, in a way, she had her dalliance with the Newman Foundation a bit earlier perhaps than the others did. Others sort of were still felt like it was working to their advantage, whereas Tara almost tried to go up against them and felt like she couldn't. And, you know, we had that lovely scene, and Daisy's on the screen now, Anya, who's just so wonderful. Great. Oh my God.
She's so good.
Oh, where you understand then the stakes for Tara, that, you know, if somebody takes your child or threatens your child, you go, of course you're going to go, I'm going to figure out a way to bring them down. It's sort of poetic justice in a way that then she almost did to Catherine Newman what they had done to her, by sort of making her believe her child was gone.
Yeah, and we talked an awful lot about that, you know, with Apple as well, because parents were like, would she clear? I mean, the relationship between you guys is just, you know, mother and daughter is so strong, and clearly, I think, you know, and the way you performed it is just so moving, and it's just like, would a mother ever do that? And where we got to was, and my argument always was that, but the way Tara sees it is that she's teaching her something. It is an act of love. What she's doing is an act of love of, like, you know, and I think that's what Daisy understands by the end of it, is just like, you know, she's teaching her a life lesson like no one else, you know, in the most public way possible. I hope that's what comes across.
It's reflective of so many, you know, it's almost like we repeat the things our upbringings in a way, and she sort of had her dad torn away from her, and maybe there's something in that she feels like the dad sacrificed their relationship so that she wasn't attached to that trauma. And just wonder, and the other thing is, it's like Tara doesn't need to be right, she just needs to think she's right, you know. And it does, it was such a nice turn to play of the, like, slightly,
I think she feels
unhinged.
She has no choice.
Yeah.
You know, I think she feels she has no choice. And actually that's when, you know, I when you go back over the plot and you go, you know, it's not like this isn't some big master plan that she had from the very beginning. She didn't expect to happen what happened at the midpoint of the series. You know, she thought this was going to be much more straightforward. And you know, the people that were selected to be the fall guys for it have got, as I think, you know, we've either been past it or not yet, but the, you know, that they all are culpable in some ways, and the point of that is, like, as indeed we all are to some degree, we are all culpable for the culture that we are part of. And I was losing the track, but she's not, you know, I kind of had to keep saying this to people, that it's not, she didn't plan it beyond, you know, she didn't plan to go to America. But what she did brilliantly, I think, and what you got across brilliantly, was she rolled with it, and in a way it got better, you know, the plan got better by our guys stepping up the way they did and doing what they did and acting the way they did. She didn't expect that.
Yeah, and I suppose it's once she's going up against a titan in Catherine Newman, and so if she really wants to make, you know, this whole plan worth it, she needs Catherine Newman to say that she lied about Eric Creswell, her Tara's dad.
Absolutely.
And as so, it's almost like it's not a game of chicken, but it's like she's stepping up every time, and I think probably realizes, wow, I could lose everything, including my daughter, over this, and including the career that I've built from, like, against all odds, but I've got to do that to take down this. And it's not just Catherine Newman Fatara then, it's the whole hierarchy of wealth and power and control and it made sense to me.
And that's what it is, isn't it? It's like, until she says those words, until she tells the truth, it's not done for Tara. And it's kind of, so really it's like, it's just trying to keep it alive for her. All that, you know, it's kind of like, it should be really tense, I think.
Yeah. We just saw the moment where Eddie jumps down with his gun and is kind of, all of a sudden he's got this gun and he picked it up from the scene, like when Natalie shot Copewell. How was that casting process with Tom, and did you kind of, you know, because that's such a massive switch, and I spoke to Tom a bit about this, but is that, you know, when you're casting people, you've got to have someone that can do both and make it look good.
That's right. Yeah. Well, and he did, you know, that was the thing. I think we definitely, but I'm pretty gave him sides that, with both, you know, both bits of the character, if you want, so that, but the difficult bit was that he had to be young for the character, but equally you had to believe that he had some field experience. So we talked I mean, all these characters have got deep backstories that were biogs that were written and you know, hopefully adhered to. And Tom's was that you know, Eddie had been recruited after getting into a bit of trouble, and they thought, well, he'd be perfect for a certain kind of job, and you know, he's so good. And I remember seeing, you know, with the audition, it's not cheekiness, it's more than that. But there is a mischief, and you just think he could be anyone.
Exactly.
I remember saying to Jay at Apple, it's just like, in that first interview with him back in episode 3 or 4, I remember we talked a lot about, but do you get a sense of who the character is? And we were saying something, but the joy of him is he could be anyone, this guy, could be anyone. And you can't quite pin him down. In fact, he says he has a homosexual encounter, I think, in that interview, and later he refers to his girlfriend. And of course, both may be true or neither.
Yeah.
Tom's just got that wonderful.
He does. He's got that quality. He's got that magic. Yeah, absolutely. And you just sort of, you are drawn in, and totally believable, like, and both switch, that switch is just, oh, there's so many payoffs in this episode. Here's the video message that's happening now that Tara leaves. And I remember there being a few discussions about this, but Tara's in her blue top, which means it was the day they went to New York. So, you know, I think she perhaps realized once they were going that this was, you know, she might not make it back necessarily. Because then it's so amazing with the payoff with the snow globe and everything, but seeing all the different generations, it really makes me tearful of, you know, just the damage that's done, the damage that's, which is a little bit what this speech is about, of at least when my feeling was, like, when an action is taken by somebody that's powerful enough, the ripple on effect in a family is catastrophic.
Yep,
is that something that you kind of wanted to get across by showing all these different generations?
That's interesting. It also just made me think, I wrote another drama about that recently, and I do, it's a preoccupation of mine, I think. It's just like, I mean, particularly when it comes to crime, and you know, we look at, as a culture, we look at these things as discrete, and we send someone to court, and then we punish them for it, but actually that's just the scratching the surface of what's happened, you know, in terms of the person who's committed the crime, the person who's often been hurt by that crime. They both have families, usually. They both come from communities, usually. I hadn't really thought about, I mean, I obviously thought about the cross-generational nature of it here, but the tendrils of it are, you know, of the damage, as you say. It's, and that's, I think, what, you know, what Leo hopefully gets across is that he, because the difficult bit always was, like, I was never in two minds about the fact that he loves his mom. He really loves his mom. And in a sense, again, it's an act of love, but obviously it's the real, it's tough love in the extreme. But I think he sees this as the only way to stop the damage, you know?
Yeah.
But at least mitigate it. I mean, that's why he did what he did, I think.
Yeah.
Talking to her, all the rest of it. It's like he's tried all that. That's all, you know, I'm sure he's seen all that. He knows her really well.
Yeah. And then that then makes that turn at the end when he thinks he's kind of outsmarted her when she's sort of saying, okay, well, let's see. Yeah. Game on, baby.
It's not quite as simple as that, is it?
Yeah, exactly. And then we have the dad character coming into Daisy. And, you know, it just feels like, I mean, you're a brilliant architect of a story. And so, you know, you kind of build our hearts up and then you break us down again. But I feel in this moment that Daisy's gonna, you know, kind of spill the beans. She's just seen her mom basically give a goodbye. And then she's faced with her dad, who she, you know, obviously like loves as well. And you see that flash of Tara in her when she says, no, I don't.
I think that's it, isn't it? That's exactly what I was going to say. And actually even the expression she's wearing there, you just go, see, that is, it's quite Tara-esque, isn't it? It's kind of like, I think she's, you two are so good together. I mean, you just, I mean, just such a great relationship that.
She was brilliant, and she really made me set my game up too, because I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to bring it here. What was that process?
She'd grown as well quite a lot. I had to put that line in about how much she'd grown from before and after the pandemic when we started up again.
I know. Like, how was, because you were show running this through a pandemic, or not, like at the start was sort of not, and then we shut down, and then it was, you know, filming on two sides of the world. Do you just, like, what makes you able to cope with that situation?
Well, I was a little bit bitter, and everybody else had a bit of a break, but I didn't. I just, you know, the script side of things just ran all the way through. And in some ways, I mean, nobody would ever say the pandemic was a good thing, but it what it did mean was that we had a lot of time to develop the scripts and work on the scripts, which is never ever a bad thing. And it was normal times for me. I mean, as I talk to you, I'm sitting at my desk, and this was my, you know, this was what I was doing every day.
Oh, look, here comes this.
Exactly.
When you watch these scenes, I've switched my computer over to this side because it was running out of battery. Just, you know, if somebody thinks I'm like not going crazy. When you see all the little bits of it, like the little snippets here and there, and trying to, you know, imagine it all then together and how we're going to shoot it. And I've got questions about, like, how do you plot everything, you know, because there's so many intercuts in this last episode. Do you have things upon the wall? Are you like red stringing it to different places?
It was written this way. I tell you what, what I often do, if there's different story strands, I will, what's important is that, for me, is that they each deliver in a way. So I'm very careful not to try and, even if I've got an idea in my head about a sequence, like, I don't want to, that might not be possible if it doesn't work, because if the story isn't honored, do you know what I mean? So I've got to, this is really pedestrian, but I will do each story strand in, like, so one will be Times Roman and one will be Times Roman bold and one will be on my, you know, and then I'll literally cut them out and kind of like, and spread them across the floor or whatever, and just start playing with them, you know, even just do that for a single, you know, an act or a sequence or whatever. And, And I mean, it changed again, but it was written like this. I'm just remembering though, I was in Scotland working in the hotel room, and I remember Chris sent me the first cut, and I just was like, I remember getting to this bit and just thinking, oh, I think it's going to work. I think it might just work. And I just remember feeling so elated. I phoned him straight away and just so elated.
Because it's such a huge, there's so much going on in it, isn't it? It's like, the culmination, yeah. And you see all the Easter eggs planted that, yes, I'm sure there's so much pressure going. Is the payoff going to be what you'd hoped? And is it, yeah.
Yeah. And is everybody, is everybody's story honored in a way? Because there's there's so many big characters in the show, I think.
Yeah.
Which, going back to the original, I know why they chose not to characterize the kidnap victim and the kidnapper particularly. It was like that wasn't particularly followed. And it was just like that was obviously a conscious decision that was made, but it was, I mean, when you get to the final episode, and you go, we have a lot of characters here, this is like, and we have a certain amount of time, but it was a real relief when I hope other people agree. I certainly felt like, even from the first cut, and then there was a huge amount of work post that, but just that first cut, when almost like a first draft of a script, I was able to phone the director and go, I think it's brilliant. I think it's gonna work. And he felt the same, which was great.
Yeah, I mean, Chris is just amazing, isn't he? And he gets it. I feel like from all his direction, obviously chatting to him, it feels like he got the bigger, the bigger kind of questions posed, but then also getting those character moments in it as well. And there's just there's so many pieces of nuance in it.
Yeah. And he gets them all, doesn't he? And that's sort of like, there's a lot of, that's real. It's great. As a writer, to work with a director who not only reads stage directions, but actually, then goes, yeah, but what if, and he was integral to the entire process, because I met him just to have a general chat, actually. And I just started working on this. I mean, there's no director, and we were chatting about the Americans, and I was just saying, like, that marriage of the domestic with something much bigger and this, where the stakes were huge, like, and you never see the join. That was what I loved about that show. And I said, and actually, if we do it well, that's what this show should be. And he said, well, can I have a read? And that was where it started.
It was just the perfect pairing. Yeah, and he has a real sensibility where he just understands humans, and obviously you do as well. How brilliant was Carl Johnson, who played Eric Creswell? I never got to meet him, but he's just
fantastic.
Just breaks your heart, because you do actor. Yeah, and there's so much on that part, I feel like, because he's the symbol of what the big bads do to people. Like, that's why we care, because we see him, right? And we see him, sort of a shell of a human.
Conversation about with how much is enough, to show of him, to really care about that. And I mean, I think you also care because you care about Tara, hopefully, and he's they're an extension of each other in a way, so that helps.
There's not that much time either to get his story out in one setting. You don't really. It's lovely when we saw Eric Creswell sort of do the, when he's escaping and he's running, and you kind of see his environment a little bit. But apart from that, we just see him in the police room, and we've got to, get.
There was a version where we were on a boat with him, and in episode seven, and it just. The thing is with really, when you think about 6 and 7, you're kind of on a runway, and you've just got to keep powering and motoring, because any dog legs at that point really take the air out of the balloon, and it's mixing our metaphors horribly here, but
that makes sense to me.
We really felt like, I really want to see what his boat looks like. And once there was a version where our cops went and found him, in 7, rather than the you know, him come to them. But yeah, I think we made the right decision.
Totally, because
Carl, which would have been great.
Oh, I know, but you can. But he brings that with him. You just you know it, and I think it's, you know, audiences are always smarter than a lot of people think, aren't they? In terms of, like, now we all get to imagine where he's come from, and him just saying, you know, I was then living on a barge or you know, whatever. It's it breaks your heart, but that, like you say, there's not enough. You then dragged on to the next thing, and you know, there's not enough time to grieve because, it doesn't let up.
Breathless, isn't it?
Yeah. And this moment too. So, oh my gosh, who was it? The M Tree on Instagram said that they love the Adesh and Eddie bromance. And we really see it here too when, you know, Eddie / whoever he really is.
You do know me.
Yeah, you do know me. And that's genuine, right?
Yeah. Like, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I think they both know it is. They both know it is, which is interesting, always interesting to me, despite the sheer, the volume of lies told across these 8 episodes is huge. And yet I still, you know, I still think our characters know each other and they know that there is a connection between them. And it's sort of immaterial that the other stuff, I mean, it's not immaterial, obviously, but it's, you know, it's not as important as I think what they've found and what Adesh has found through this journey is huge, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And Kunal plays it so just beautifully. Like, he disappears into that role. I mean, he's potentially one of the most different people to his character, you know, just sort of energetic wise. And it was amazing to work with Kay just anyway, but in this role as Adesh, there's just, he has such a growth as a character, it feels like, from, you know, seemingly feeling completely out of place and like he couldn't get a leg up to then kind of deciding he's like, you know, one of the last ones standing.
Yeah. Well, look at what I did, I think. It's like, as Tara says to him, you've been looking for meaning in your life. Well, it's found you, you know, and I think, you know, that sort of last conversation we saw to this point is him going, oh yeah, you know, that's true. It's like, they sort of became who they were accused of being, which was always, for me, the lovely irony of it. And the shape of the episode was like going, you know, right up till this point where, you know, well, in a minute, I think with the masks, you just go like, they've been turned into who they were spun as, you know. And
which is so, I mean, it's beautiful when you watch it, but then is it like, how do I put this in a way that is going to make sense to someone that's so amazing with words? Like, I wrote this down because that's, to me, that's such an amazing image of the, you know, the moment that they put it on and then they look. So are we saying that, you know, are they just as bad as the people that create these false narratives, or are they, is it the, you know, the like masked Robin Hood? Like, are we, because it's also the royals who are, you know, obviously like monarchy and
it's really great, isn't it? Which is my favorite kind of drama, but I think, you know, I think it is that they sort of have to be in the game to affect the game in a way, you know, I think is the way I saw it and see it. And and you know, certainly Adesh, but even Tara, I think there's a degree to which she preferred not to do any of this, not to have to have done any of this. But it is that kind of, like, the thing that we talked about a lot in the room was, what is, you know, when do you participate? When do you step in and go, okay, now I'm going to go to a march. I'm not going to rely on other people anymore. Now I'm going to, you know, I've got a little girl or whatever it is. What's the point at which you decide? We had some really candid conversations about it and about, you know, but who joined the Me Too march and if you didn't, why didn't you? You know, all those things, really, which is what really another thing that the show's all about is, they've sort of been pulled into this in a way, but To what degree are they also getting something from it? I mean, certainly Adesh, I think you get that sense of that last episode. I think in Seven they see pictures of themselves on in graffiti, and it's like, well, that's kind of nice, you know.
Yeah,
like
cool. Yeah, yeah. What does that status do? And then, you know, what is driving you? Is it the power and it's fun, or is it because you are like, how much change are you enacting now? And I suppose we'll see if there's, you know, with if there is a season two or whatever's meant to be after this, is like, it'd be really interesting where those characters are. And I think we kind of see it at the end. Every character is left on this sort of note of hope, in a way, it feels like. And you know, you obviously don't know if it's hope, because then they're going to go and be able to redeem themselves, or it's that thrill of the
beginning of something.
Are they criminals now? This is one of my favorite, and I got asked quite a few questions about what your favorite scene might be, and this is, I think, one of mine with Catherine Newman in it. Yeah, because it's just so, you know, we've seen Catherine be extremely strong and stoic, we've seen her break down, we've seen her do what she needed to do to get her son back, and then we see like that, we see her do her job.
Yeah.
And why she's, you know, running this huge corporation. Yeah. Do you have a favorite scene?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. And not one I expected. So do I have a great scene? A favorite scene. There's some scenes in in episode 5 that I'm very fond of, where you're all just, I think just because I was so thrilled to see you all together for the first time in that cottage.
Yeah.
It was just so, I'd been working on so much on all of you sort of individually. And then I don't know, it was just so thrilling to have everybody in that space. So it just felt like it just started to cohere a bit in that episode as well. Just like, okay, now we're starting to put things together, and also just take a breath a minute.
Yeah.
Everything that was so frenetic.
Totally. Well, I'm talking about taking a breath. That's the end of the episode.
I know. Man, I love that last shot. What a shot, huh?
Oh my God. And that was so crazy to do, because we were on whatever that ferry was, and we only had you know, because we come off the Statue of Liberty, so it was such a specific part along that ferry, and there was real people on the ferry, and I had a wig on, and the wig, because it was so windy, she kept like flipping up, and then so that hat that I've got on was from one of the crew guys.
Oh, was it?
Like, she needs a hat, yeah, because I couldn't, the wig, and then there was just no time, we couldn't get the next one, and if we got the next ferry, it meant the sun would be coming up, and yeah, so
the hat's like a mariner's hat as well, so it's absolutely perfect.
Oh my gosh, it's perfect. And just this, that's what I mean, like, there's just so much magic about this show, in that last moment, you know, it's Tara going, oh, taking a breath, but that was the last thing that I shot, that was my last scene, and it was Kunal's last scene to shoot, so then you just go,
it often doesn't happen that way, does it, that it's the last scene, your last scene.
I'm gonna just quickly look through some of these, many of the questions that came up as of we've answered, but you know, a huge reason of me doing these watch-alongs is to try to inspire people, but also give quite practical advice if you wanted to do certain things within the industry. Do you have advice to writers or storytellers kind of in general, of a place to start if you're kind of interested in, I guess, writing for TV, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure it's particularly original advice, but it's advice that it was really useful to me, which was really, you know, write what matters to you. I remember the novelist who said, you know, write as if you're going to die next year, sort of thing, or, you know, you had 12 months to live, you've got 12 months to live, what you're going to write. And I think certainly starting out, it's really important that you get across what you're, you know, who you are, what your what kind of stuff do you want to write? What are you about? You know, what are you passionate about? What are you? And it's not, and I'm not saying, like, you know, some people say, oh, what have you got to say? What do you want to say? Well, that's a lot of pressure, you know, to say something original through a screenplay. That's not what I'm saying. I think it could, you know, it's just that you are passionate about what you're writing about. Because I think, you know, I obviously read a lot of writers' scripts, and some of them have got incredible craft, but clearly they're trying to write for a particular show, or and that's mm-hmm. great, that's fine, there's a place for that. But I think starting out, you know, just pour yourself into it, pour your heart into it, because they are the scripts you notice. You know, they are the scripts that people notice. It was the same for me starting out. Like, I wrote something that would never be made in a million years, but it made people go, well, should we meet him? And just work really, really hard. That was, I mean, Jimmy McGovern's one of my absolute heroes. And I got to meet him when I was starting out. And he said, there was a group of us and we'd been chosen to be on this thing. And he said, you all think you're really special, don't you? And he said, but the only thing that separates you from every other writer in the world is how hard you're prepared to work.
Wow.
That's always stuck with me. I think there's a lot in, you know,
absolutely. And I think it's okay to go, actually, I want to keep my passion as my passion, and I don't want to make it into a job. Because as soon as you start going down that road, you have to create this something out of nothing when you're not feeling it, when you're not really passionate about it, actually. And it can, you know, so that's you do have to be ready, don't you, to merge those two. It's the same with
you do, and that's so true. I think that's so true. It's enjoying it isn't talked about very often, but it's a really important part of it, I think. And people talk about it, don't they, far more with novels and with prose than they do about script writing, I think. But
I suppose so. I don't know. I mean, I love reading scripts the best, and clearly, because I'm meant to be, you know, they mean so much to me. But yeah, I take the story on more somehow. Whereas when I'm reading a novel, I can also be thinking about my shopping list. Whereas when I'm reading a script, having said that, I have read some scripts where, you know, they don't really get me. But there's just something about scripts to me, and I think, you know, we could talk all day about the medium of television and movies and all those things, but they're so important, and they're so important for so many reasons on escapism, but also you can say such amazing messages or pose questions, and then, you know,
I think for me, it's always been TV for me and not film. I love watching films and movies. It's just not something I've ever wanted to write particularly. I think you know, that you can be in someone's, I mean, it's changed a bit now with the way movies are distributed, but old fashioned TV, if you want, and still now, to be in someone's living room, to be in someone's space, and be talking to them through characters you created or whatever. I mean, that's extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, that's just such a privilege. It's extraordinary. It's the best thing. It's the best thing.
Well, I'm very thankful for having voices like you, and also people that champion so much young talent, and you're always giving great advice and just spending, you know, an hour of your time today when I know you've got so many things going on, so much to do. So thank you so much.
Such a pleasure.
I really
such a pleasure. Thank you for asking me. And
yes, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Of course. Lovely. Thank you. And congratulations.
Oh, congratulations to you. Season. Congratulations to us. I want there to be more episodes now. I've been enjoying this so much. Like where's episode 9? Why hasn't anybody written that yet? It should be out next week.
Yeah. I know, I say this every time, but that was so great. Oh, gosh, I love him. I brought you over here so that you could see this view a bit more. Does that make you feel a bit nauseous? Whoa. Here's our lovely England in the background. Maybe I should put some sort of nausea warning on this outro. Where's my camera? Oh, there you are. Oh, gosh. Well, that's it. The Watch Along Suspicion Edition is wrapped. Thank you so much for being along for this journey. I guess let me know if you liked it. I'm sort of toying with the idea of doing other versions of a watch along. So, you know, do let me know. Instagram me and let me know what you think. So thankful and grateful to everybody that has been a guest on this watch along Suspicion Edition, and for all of you for watching and listening. This has got such a special part in my heart, and it's something I'm really passionate about, and it's been a total joy to do, and just a real privilege actually to introduce some people to you that I find amazing, and I'm so grateful to be in my life and to have their advice and just their kind of experiences. You know, I've got to chat with them, and I'm just glad that you've now got to chat with them too. That is the way it should be. Thank you so much for being here, and sending you just loads of love. It's been a heck of a couple of years, and I'm so grateful that we've got a TV show like Suspicion out there to enjoy. How do you wrap these up? I'll say this. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Look, there's my little station. Oh, thank you for being here. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next time.